Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 51.
Oh, yeah. You know what that means.
One more, and it's 52.
Mm-hmm. Also, I guess this is the thing-iversary.
It is, technically.
It is the technical adversity.
And it is, that is technically correct. The best kind of correct.
That is true. It is literally correct. It's like the second best kind of correct.
So how are you doing, Eric?
I'm just doing it up over here.
It? What's it?
It is whatever I want it to be.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You kind of expected a better answer, didn't you?
Meh.
Well, screw you, Dorman.
Maybe not. I don't know. I try not to set my expectations too high.
You can't set them too high. Not with me. I'll just say the word Linux and disappear.
Oh, no. Where'd you go?
I went to Linux.
Oh. So it's like the Tron world, but
yes, except it's full of an operating system that hates you and penguins.
It doesn't hate you and penguins.
It just hates you, and there's a shitload of penguins.
Well, I like penguins.
Yeah, penguins are good, but they hate you.
Penguins hate you?
Little known fact.
Not if you fish.
Well, they do hate fish because they're not in their belly. And when they're in their belly, they're food, so they're no longer fish. You cease to be a fish.
Okay.
You apparently have never watched David Attenborough.
I have not. I'm not a big fan of those dry nature documentaries.
I didn't realize you hated David Attenborough.
I hate him.
Wow, you suck, Dorman.
I'm just full of rage and hate.
You sound like it, Jesus.
I never watch one of his documentaries, so I hate him.
Okay, well, We're going to watch Life on Blu-ray because it's amazing. It actually is amazing. I'm shocked you've never watched any.
I've seen like 5-minute clips, but
I don't know. I really like those kind of photographers, and I don't know. They're like heroes to me. It's like really they're like modern day adventurers. It's just the coolest thing.
I just go outside and look at the lizards on the sidewalk.
Lord knows there's a shitload of them.
There's like like the size of Godzilla this morning. I'm not kidding.
Was it literally the size of Godzilla?
Literally.
Literally.
The size of Godzilla.
Literally the size of a fictional character.
Exactly. Literally.
Literally. I don't even think that can be true.
What do you mean?
Let's not.
How do you want to? Let's break this down.
No, let's not. Let's terminate that right here. I gotta stand firm on this.
Terminator. That's a totally different franchise.
Oh God.
You know that Doctor Who guy isn't going to be in Terminator 5.
Jesus Christ. Where did this podcast go?
I don't know. I think it's time for checking in.
I think it's long past time for checking in.
Time for checking in.
Fantastic.
I'll go first.
Why don't you?
I'm going to go first. I feel like going first this week. First thing I'm going to talk about is a game called Risk of Rain. It's for your computers.
I'm so shocked.
I know. Eric saw me playing this 40 times on Steam.
Steam buddies.
Yeah. Risk of Rain is a roguelike action platformer. For those unfamiliar with the term, basically means you have one life and then you die and then you start over. There's no, I mean, you can unlock additional things and new characters, but you cannot, it doesn't, you can't save your game and start in, like, where you left off. You go through it one time and try and beat the game. If you die, you start over.
This is named after the game company, Roguelike.
I don't think that term came before that. I'm not positive, though. There is a huge war about that term and the way it's been applied to games. Like, if you go to, like, really nerdy game forums, like, there's people who are like, I was playing games like that before that term even existed, and that's the games they call that now aren't really those types of games. But I use it in the way that most people use it. It's like Rogue Legacy or why can't you think of the name of the game?
You're correct, though, that it has existed much longer than the game company.
Yes, yes.
It is a very old term,
yeah.
At least in terms of games.
Right, but this game, it's fairly simple. You're like a spaceman who's crash-landed on an alien planet, and you have, depending on your class, you start off with one class, unlock the commando, and as you get better, go further in the game, do different things, you unlock new classes who have different abilities, different attacks, stuff like that. You're just trying to survive as long as you can, kill enemies, get money from them, and then with that money you can unlock new items, which is the main way to get better. Like, to be a better player is to get crazy items that do all kinds of stuff. You know, increase your attack speed, give you health whenever you damage someone, whenever you kill someone, they drop health, whenever, you know, you have slowly increased your money throughout the game. There's hundreds of items by this time if you unlock them all, but there's like, the soundtrack is really, really good, Eric, you'd love it. Mm-hmm. It's a chiptune type soundtrack, really, really, really nice. It's addictive, like a lot of roguelike games. You just want to you die. I want to play again. I need to play again. The enemy's design is really cool. The environments are really, really neat. There's like a multitude of variations on these planets, and each have, the layouts are the same every time, but the location of items and warp portals and all that stuff are different. So obviously you have to explore it every time. And there is a timer, and the longer you play, the harder it gets. So you can't just take your time and explore and try and find all the items. So if you do, by the time you get everything, it won't be worth it because the enemies will still be so difficult that you'll get killed very quickly.
You like it better or worse than Rogue Legacy?
I think I like Rogue Legacy more.
I know you were all about it. I didn't actually care for it that much. I bought it based on your recommendation. And I was sorely disappointed, and I was like, Robbie's dumb, and I'm not playing this anymore.
I like Rogue Legacy more. It's not nearly the same. Rogue Legacy had a lot of RPG qualities in it, mm-hmm. where you could, as you got money, you could upgrade your skills and, your starting items. Like, in the game, your children, your next lives would be better.
Right.
In this game, they are not. The only thing that makes you, like, have better stats and all that is killing enemies and getting new items, all which are in the game. So you start fresh. Literally, I mean, it's much purer, I guess, than Rogue Legacy is. Rogue Legacy is not as a pure roguelike game as this is, for sure.
Did you say what kind of game it is? Like, Rogue Legacy was like a platformer?
Well, it's the same thing. It's an action platformer.
It's an action platformer.
You shoot stuff. You have a gun, your different classes have different, some attacks are melee attacks, but mostly you're shooting stuff with different weapons and, you're platforming and you have different, you know, you can get a jetpack, makes you jump a little higher, you can, you know, roll, and there's all kinds of different things. I haven't gotten through the whole game yet. I mean, I've unlocked two classes. So, I have a long way to go. It gets ridiculously difficult. If you want something hard, this is the game for you. It's very, very, very difficult. The other thing I want to talk about is a very old game that, because...
It's apparently a good day to check in with it.
Yeah, it is, because it is May 4th. I'm not going to say that stupid phrase.
Well, I will say that it's my brother's birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
There you go.
His birthday is on Star Wars Day.
Yeah, Star Wars Day. There's, in honor of Star Wars Day, they had a whole bunch of sales on Steam for Star Wars games, including Knights of the Old Republic, the original Knights of the Old Republic, the game that BioWare really first came out big with. And, Eric, have you played Knights of the Old Republic?
No, I've heard it's kind of like the classic BioWare game.
Yeah.
Possibly from you. I don't know.
Probably. It's the first game that BioWare released that was, you know, like the Mass Effect games were. This is the proto Mass Effect, basically. I mean, it's the same structure, except it has a Star Wars theme. Like, so you can get lightsabers and customize your lightsabers. You get different colors, blades, or double, you can get a double bladed lightsaber, or two single bladed lightsabers. And it also has that moral wheel thing where you can be evil, you can be dark side or light side. And, you know, your appearance changes depending on, you know, how evil you are. If you get really evil, your skin gets all cracked and you get like a red aura around you and your eyes turn red. You become one of the Sith, whatever. But yeah, it's the same thing in Mass Effect. You go around, there's a lot of optional side quests, you level up. A lot of items and a lot of really, really well-written side characters and party members. And that's one thing it certainly does share with Mass Effect. Every single character is fully fleshed out. You'll see a lot of traces of all those Mass Effect aliens. You see a lot of kind of similar stuff in this game.
Hmm.
And biotics in Mass Effect is the Force. And right. You're just using Force powers in this. They just have to call it something else in Mass Effect. But, it's one of my favorite games of all time. It's so much fun. And I wanted to go back into it, and I'm really enjoying it. It's like a blast from the past.
It looks like they're also selling Dark Forces. Did you ever play that?
I've never played that.
It was, a Star Wars game done basically on the Doom engine.
Oh.
It says that it was released 2009. That is a load of bull honky.
The last time it was released was 2009. Re-release.
Yes,
probably.
It is a gloriously ugly game.
Yeah.
It is so ugly.
Knights of the Republic does show its age a little bit. There's no mods out there that make it look better, but it's not bad looking. It's okay. It was ahead of its time when it was released, so it hasn't aged as terribly as some older games. But it's like $3 on Steam. Go buy it. It's so good. If you've never played Knights of the Republic, it's such a good game.
It will probably not be $3 by the time anyone listens to this, though.
That's true. The sale will probably be over by the time anyone listens to this. Even if you buy it.
Possibly so.
You buy it at $5 or I think it's regular price is $5 or $10. It's worth that. It's worth $50. It's like a 50-hour game at least, probably more. You'll get tons of playtime out of it. Especially if you play more than once, which you'll want to play it as both a light and a dark character. Because it drastically changes the game, just like Mass Effect. There's so many choices. But I think I've prattled on long enough. Eric, what do you got?
Well, you've bitten me with the computer building bug.
Uh-oh.
Yep, so last night I went to the computer store and I saw a cute little computer case.
Oh, no!
It is a Cooler Master 130. I can't remember all the specs of it, but I'll probably post the build somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They had one in store at the Tiger Direct, and I immediately went home and looked up a build around this thing. So I'm going to make myself, for no good reason other than wanting to, a home Linux file server.
Okay. So
this is the first time I've actually bought stuff specifically to put Linux on it, which is, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting thing. But of course, I got Mr. Ham involved in this.
Uh oh.
And he told me I was putting too much RAM in it.
that's you. You like RAM.
Of course I do.
Of course you do.
I don't have that many problems with this machine either. it doesn't go slow. I'm not fucking around with that. Anyway, I saved myself about $70 and cut down on the amount of RAM in it. And those things are being shipped to me through the magic of the internet. So, my little server build. So, yes, I'm all excited about building another Linux server instead of out of good parts and not out of garbage this time.
That's important.
It is important, you know. I don't have to slum it anymore. And you already know about the other thing.
I do?
Of course you do.
What is it?
Because apparently we talk to each other outside of the radio.
No, we can't. We have an embargo against that.
It is important. You are waging war on the Ukraine.
Yeah, absolutely.
That just sounds exactly like something you'd do.
Yep, war.
I saw a mutual favorite band of ours last night. You of course already know this.
I did know this.
The Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. Is that exactly what they're named?
Yes.
I just call them the Rev.
Well, I mean, I think that's how everybody does. They just go Rev. I went and saw Rev.
Yeah, I saw Rev. But I saw Rev. And you know, I bought four of the five albums that they had. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to actually buy something and support the guy.
Mm-hmm.
First two albums, I don't think they're that good.
The problem is production quality.
Maybe. The vocals sounded messy.
Well, the
guitar is excellent, but it...
No, the problem is production quality. He even admits it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after their most recent album, mm-hmm. which is, like, a modern studio, like, he's like, yeah, they're basically demos, our previous albums.
Oh, and I get that. You can't expect it to everyone to start out at super pro level, but for me, I thought the vocals were really messy, and it did not really sound like it was recorded badly. It just sounded like he's changed his singing style tremendously, but we're talking like, I don't know, from 2007 to like 2010. You know, it had done a lot of running around and playing and had evolved a lot. I know all the songs that I enjoyed from the shows were off those two later albums.
From what I've read, is that mm-hmm. the first few albums, when he was trying to make an authentic country sound, which is like a band recording, like they just record all together.
Yes.
And it doesn't do them justice. It doesn't sound as nearly as good mm-hmm. as them live. And the most recent album, I think, does do them better justice than the first few albums do.
I'll have to, if I can buy the newest album, I might buy it off their website, but I was only going to spend $40, because the latest two were really good, and I think you can actually get it on Spotify, so I'll probably just check it out there, see what I feel about it.
Between the Ditches is the most recent album. That's really solid.
The 2012?
Yes.
Okay. I know that anyone that's seen them, they're just one of those amazing live acts. I don't know. I'd be poor for missing them anytime they're near me. They're an amazing band.
Yeah, I wish we were at a wedding rehearsal on the night they were down here, unfortunately, or else we would have seen them. They're great. They will make you a fan. Go see them live once. You'll become a fan.
Yep.
That's all it takes.
You'll be a part of the cult of the Rev.
Yep.
So it goes.
Is that it, Eric? That's all you got?
I think that's plenty.
You know what time it is then?
I don't know. I hope it's time to flop it out.
It's time to flop it out. It's time for Weekly Floppies.
Yay. Just what I always wanted.
It's like a Red Ryder BB gun. Shoot your eye out, kid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you'll flop your eye out.
Flop your eye out, kid. Starting off DC, our first book is Forever Evil Aftermath. It's funny that these books are supposedly after Forever Evil, yet the last issue of Forever Evil hasn't come out yet.
I think everyone's just like, it's done, it's dead, fuck it.
Yeah, it's Batman vs. Bane, number one, one shot. Apparently, there's been an event happening where Bane has taken over Gotham.
Much like that movie that came out a couple years ago. Ooh.
I've not even seen it, and I was like, this seems like a lot like the movie.
It's a lot like the movie.
Very much like the movie.
But there's not a lot happens in this. Batman comes back, and he fights Bane. His phrase is like this: I am Gotham's king, and
I am hell.
I am hell, and I will burn in hell before I ever fear you, and things like that, and people getting hit in the face with filing cabinets and fountains.
Well, that I can get behind, but the rest of this book is a big steaming pile of stupid.
It's really dumb.
It's pretty fucking dumb.
It's really stupid. I particularly like a phrase of Bane going, "Grah!"
There's a lot of that in this book.
Yeah, just lots of noises and people getting hit. Batman hits a guy with his car. I'm fairly certain Batman tries not to murder people. If you get hit by the Batmobile, I'm pretty sure you're going to die.
Well, Batman's hell now. I mean, I think all bets are off when Batman is hell.
Yeah, and Scarecrow falls from... How far up is that? Is he dangling from his feet, or did he, like, literally land on his head? I can't tell. I mean, there's one of many problems with this.
I think I love it how Bane hits Batman with the W, probably, like, off of, like, Wayne Tower or something like that.
Yes.
I don't know.
Yes.
But it's a big W.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you do when you fight Batman. You hit him with a W.
He couldn't even, like, make a pun or something.
He does say, "Rrr."
That's not a pun.
How about, "Arr."
Instead of the W, it should have been the A, and he could have been like, "A," and then hit him with it.
I don't know. I think it's a problem whenever they show Bane without his mask on. Mm-hmm. Like, he just looks dumb. Like, without that mask. I don't know. And why, this book is stupid and pointless. they needed something to piece together what happens after Bane loses. Like, there's like 7 issues of Bane taking control of Gotham after breaking out of Arkham and stuff during this Forever Evil thing. And they have 1 issue of a stupid brawl between Batman and Bane, and Bane's back in prison. It's just so pointless. And the art is fine.
It's okay. It's on the Jim Lee side, and the artist seems to not realize that Bane does not really change size. Not quite to the extent that he's just drawing it inconsistently.
Yes. I didn't mention, I didn't give the credits. Peter J. Tomasi is writer, Scott Eaton pencils, Hi-Fi is the colors, Travis Landham is letters, Jamie Mendoza and Scott Hanna doing the inks.
Now you know who to blame.
Now you know who to blame. This is not a good comic book. Do not buy it. Batman wins. There, I told you this whole entire book.
You spoiled it for me.
I know. How dare I? Do not buy this book.
Screw you, Robbie.
Your thoughts, Eric?
Oh, no. Shit. If I had a paper copy of this, I would be throwing it across the room right now.
Yeah, it's really bad. There's nothing in it of any substance or consequence.
Yeah.
Don't bother. Batman wins. That's all you need to know. They could have just put that on the cover and put actual comic in this thing, and it would have been much better.
I'm going to write a comic book called Batman Wins that's just Batman just going from situation to situation, everything working out, just no strife at all.
He's got the easy button.
Really boring.
From Stables.
He's got the easy button.
I think that's how it works. I think every Batman should just be called Batman Wins. I think that's the thing about Batman. Next up is our title from Vertigo. Vertigo Quarterly number 1, Cyan. They're doing each of these quarterly books in a different color themed. The first one is Cyan, followed by
Magenta, yellow, and black.
Black. But black starts with, it has a K, Eric.
Yep. It stands for Keyline.
There you go. That's what you get from this podcast. You don't get from anywhere else.
Yeah.
Insider information.
Yep.
From Mr. Eric Goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting that anywhere else, folks.
I'll give you some insider information about this book. Don't fucking buy it.
No, there's 10 stories. Most of them are terrible.
Most of them are terrible.
Yeah, there's one about, like, this killer team. And
the serial artist.
Yeah.
I love that that's the first story in this book. Cause I opened this up immediately and immediately I'm like, I hate this.
Yeah.
I'm glad that's my first impression.
Yeah. I don't want to go story by story by this because most of this isn't very good.
I don't think we don't need to be like, this book is also bad.
No.
This one is also bad.
They all do a lot of blue coloring and stuff like that. I can't even tell you how many of these maybe one or two of these I actually enjoyed. I liked the one with the ice cream man fighting a werewolf because it's so stupid.
It is pretty stupid. I kind of felt like they didn't take it far enough.
No, it does have Jock doing the art, which is
it does have Jock doing the art, which was a nice surprise.
Yeah, that looks nice.
The Fabio Moon was also
at the end
was also a nice benefit.
I mean, it's just most of these stories are just so empty and bland. And
yeah,
what do you think about that the coding one, Eric? The one where the numbers are alive, and then they just...
Yeah, I'm on it right now. I started reading this, and I started flipping through, and as soon as it got to the part where people started turning into numbers, I'm like, skip. I mean, literally, skip. This is fucking dumb.
And there's about, like, setting, like, coal. I think the only ones I liked were the ice cream man one, the one with, like the EC comic style story with the gay guy who's like dating this woman keeping this woman as a beard so that, you know, no one.
Yeah.
I like that just because it's a very like EC comic style horror like thing. I mean, it's not very original, but you know, it's not bad. I thought it was fun.
No, it was a fun story. It was an interesting story.
Yeah. And the Fabio Moon one is cool just because it's Fabio Moon.
Yeah, but that's really the beginning and end of it. Yeah. I liked this goofy Mobius story
with the guy eyes
that scoops his girlfriend's eyes out.
it's very Mobius.
Yeah. I also like how his eyes look like camera apertures for no good reason.
No reason.
And I don't understand why the Fabio Moon like has like why the guy looks like John Lennon and why there's Beatles lyrics in it. It's strange to me.
I think it's just
kind of nice to look at.
I think that's all it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's they're trying to sell you on Day Tripper, which is
that's sort of what I figured as well.
Yeah. That's why there was a
Day Tripper ad.
Yeah. It's a sample of basically what Day Tripper is.
Yeah.
But this book costs like $9.
Yeah, thanks for making me buy it, dickhole.
I thought it would be good.
Yeah, it's
it seemed like it's a Vertigo quarterly, a lot of interesting writers and artists in it.
I think
themed around colors, like
everybody's just collectively shit the bed on this one.
Yeah, and I do want to mention that Joe Keating, who wrote the second story in this 918 with the drug addict who gets blown out in the airlock.
I didn't hate that one, but it's not saving this book for any.
No, it's not even, but that's not what I want. Not the quality is, I mean, it's an okay story.
Yeah.
They apparently made heavy editorial changes on it without consulting him.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So that's, and then like he released a tweet this week. He's like, yeah, the ending is considerably different than what I originally sent them, and then without consulting me, they changed it and just went to press with it. And they're like, some DC editors like, I thought we could just, you know, I didn't think we'd have to talk about this. I thought we came to this blah, 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 PR speak and stuff like that. And Joe was like, well, I just sold Shudder, just sold a whole bunch of comics, and I didn't want anyone buying this with my name attached to it thinking like, this is my story, quote unquote, when I really didn't do all this stuff. Some of it just is changed from what I originally wrote, especially the ending. He says is not, I guess, not what he originally had. I don't know, but I think that's worth mentioning. But this is $9. It's not worth $9.
No,
when like two or three of the stories are worth something, and the rest are awful.
Yeah, I mean, awful.
They're all very just generic and
well, it's they almost without a almost without exclusion, they're like the stories that like a student illustrator submits to like, you know, apply to DC or something.
Yeah,
they're all really bad.
Yeah, not good. Not and definitely not worth. If this was $4. And you're getting so much content, and there's like two or three good stories in it, I'd say it's worth $4. It is not worth $9. So,
Vertigo, you have brought shame to Process Color.
So do not buy Vertigo Quarterly number one, Cyan. I don't even know when Magenta comes out, I don't even know if we're going to bother, because $9 on this? Ugh.
It'll be very pink.
Yeah, I guess so. This is double do not buy. In two in a row. From DC Vertigo. Mm-hmm. Ugh, bad week. Rotten, there was not much coming out this week, by the way.
I don't know. I'm not impressed with this week's books.
Yeah, I wasn't either. Rye, number one from Valiant. This is the first of Valiant First, their big initiative. They're going to be launching a new book every month for, I think, through September or something. This is, written by Matt Clint, Matt Kent, I can't talk, art by Clayton Crane, letters by Dave Lanfera, because the font's all futuristic and hard to read.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about this, Eric?
I enjoyed this, I think, for the artwork. I remember when I got my first job as a professional artist, all the other people in the art department were all crazy about this artist. His name, you know, Clayton Crane.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, he was doing the new Ennis reboot of Ghost Rider, which I thought was terrible, but it was really nice looking. I feel like he's evolved his painting style. They still look really Photoshoppy, but this is more modern, more painterly.
Mm-hmm.
But the man is definitely very talented, and I could stand to see more of his stuff. It's just so different than almost anything I look at. I just sort of appreciate it on that level.
Right.
I'm really curious why Valiant loves these, like, gray dudes with red things on their chest so much.
I don't know. A lot of these are reboots from old Valiant IPs.
Yeah.
And I really don't like Clayton Crane that much. The best thing I've seen from him in my
What else have you seen that you didn't like?
His X-Force stuff, when they originally launched it.
Did it look like that other book that we hate so much?
Which one?
The one that made you angry.
Oh no, it looked like this, just not as finished. It looks rawer. And more photoshopped is the way, I guess, the way you described it. This looks a little bit more finished and more artistic and less, mm-hmm. like, obviously it came through a computer. The story is kind of, it's set in the very far future, which I don't understand why it's so far in the future.
Yeah, I don't know why that's a selling point. It seems just stupid to me.
But it's in Japan. There hasn't been a murder in 1,000 years. Rai is this AI who's like a protector of Japan. And then there's a murder. He comes to fix it. There's like this young girl who's obsessed with Rai and is excited she gets to see him. There's this clash in the background between these AI character positrons or robots, whatever you want to call them, and humans. Like, there's a big cultural clash and fight between these rebels who don't like them and whatever, or don't like them that we use them. And there's this character, like a father, like this all just Japanese leader.
Yeah, it's Big Brother.
Big Brothers, yeah.
And calling him father.
They're calling him father. Isn't that an Equilibrium they call him father?
They call him, and yeah, I was thinking the same thing. They literally do call him father in Equilibrium.
Yeah, and it has that same kind of feel as those kind of dystopian, kind of futuristic, where there's all these, I don't know, the story's kind of...
Nothing is a surprise.
Yeah, it's nothing, it's not bad, but it's nothing great. It's just kind of there.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not overly upset that I bought this, because I like seeing some more Clayton Crane.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't know.
Where are you? Where do you stand, Eric? I need to know.
On the buy, don't buy.
Yeah.
I would not go out of my way to recommend it really to anyone. It's certainly, it's not smart enough to be a smart comic, and it's
not dumb enough to be a dumb comic.
It kind of isn't dumb enough. It's very gray.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I like this of his, all the artwork I've seen of Crane's. This is my mm-hmm. favorite. Mm-hmm. I think if they had just stuck to the perspective that of the young girl, I think it would have been more interesting, but they switched.
It would have been been easier to tell a good story, you think?
Yeah, I'm more interested in her than in I do not care about this bland, like, this guy is just like a,
yeah. Hey, I'm Warrior Man.
Yeah, exactly. I cut through a gun. He is, why should I care about this guy?
Yeah, why do I care about Japan 2,000 years from now? Why do I care about robot guy that's, you know, about half a second from his wang flapping out of his pants?
You don't even know if he has one.
You don't know that. I know he's trying to show off his happy trail.
He is. I'm also a do not buy. I can't say buy this.
I cannot think of a single person that I would recommend this to, so I will not recommend it to a handsomeite.
Yeah, so Ansemites, that's a double do not buy on Rye number one. Jeez, three in a row. I think that's a record.
I don't think so. We've read some terrible comic books.
But in a row?
I'm pretty sure we had to have had at least one week that was like, don't buy any of these books.
Probably.
And then you're like, when Rat Queens came out, and I'm like, fuck!
Yeah. There actually wasn't very much stuff came out this week at all.
Everybody's just gearing up for Cinco de Cuatro.
Yes. Cinco de Cuatro. Next, we're moving to Marvel next. We are doing Avengers number 28, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Salvador LaRocca, colors by Frank Martin with Andres Mosa, letters by Corey Pettit. Most of this issue is dealing with an alternate. We haven't been reading this very much since Infinity.
No.
But to break it down, if Eric, if you didn't come up with the context clues, like these alternate dimensions.
Explain it for the dummy.
Okay, the alternate dimension Avengers came through. You know, it's connected to what the new Avengers are doing with all these multiple Earths, you know, multiple universes crashing into each other. These alternate Avengers are coming in trying to escape theirs. And now this alternate universe Bruce Banner has come to Tony and figured out what he's done. And most of this issue is just dealing with Tony and Bruce, alternate Bruce, I guess, yelling, discussing, arguing about his decision to reform the Illuminati and, you know, choose to destroy these alternate Earths if necessary. Spoiler alert, it ends with actual Bruce Banner getting welcomed into the Illuminati. Which is interesting. I like where it ended.
Yeah, it started out pretty weak, in my opinion, and then righted the ship. It became interesting. There was a sort of a moment, sort of in the middle there, was like, it clicked, and I was like, okay, I care about this book now.
Yeah, it's interesting, but it's not amazing.
To me, it's forgettable.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's not bad, but it's not great. I think, I don't know. They had to have an issue that told him welcoming Bruce Banner in, and why, I guess.
Right.
But, I don't know if this is...
It feels like a wheel-spinning issue.
Yeah, as soon as I read an Avengers issue, and it ended with, like, this alternate Avengers coming through, I'm just like, I don't want to. That's what, regardless of how he tells the story... I mean, Hickman didn't go, obviously, the normal route of just like, hey, we punch each other over and over again. But I'm sure there was some of that. I avoided this book because I didn't care about alternate Avengers fighting. I mean, yeah. They don't have to be having the same character. Like, oh, who's the real Thor? Who's the real Iron Man? Like, that just does not appeal to me at all.
Do you know what does appeal to you?
What?
Tony Stark making grumpy cat face.
He does make a grumpy cat face. But yeah, this issue is kind of forgettable. How do you like the art, Eric?
I like it okay. It's got a little bit of the Phil Noto disease.
Yeah, a lot of it's in like a boardroom. I don't know how you would.
Well, it's the illustrator's job to try and make that interesting.
I think he tries. I mean,
I think some people are good at drawing backgrounds and some aren't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm admittedly a sterile environment indoors like that is not super ideal. And I would probably struggle similarly having to draw this. So I will criticize something that I'm not particularly good at either, but he is definitely bullshitting through some backgrounds in some places. The figures are handled nicely, so, you know, it's not like a hideously ugly book to work through. He handles the grumpy cat face as well.
Yeah, a lot of this is, like you said, wheel spinning, so I have to say,
yeah.
Do not buy Avengers 28.
Yeah, total do not buy.
It's just kind of not. I mean, I read New Avengers as well this week, and it says in big letters, read Avengers 28 first. You don't need to read Avengers 28 first. You can just go read New Avengers. Works the same. Our last book of the week is Amazing Spider-Man number 1, the big book of the week. Peter Parker's Return. Yeah, it costs $40, this issue, if you buy the special deluxe digital edition. Just kidding. Costs like $10 though.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. This, even the regular edition is like $5. It does also have Inhuman number 1 at the end.
I'm so glad I got to buy that stupid fucking book again.
Peter Parker's back and it's basically him trying to pick up the pieces, figure out what happened while he was gone, you know, while he was not in his own brain. A lot of this issue is him finding the menagerie, which is a group of animal-themed supervillains. And it's just kind of snapshots of different parts of his life. Obviously, this is a number one, so he's trying to, like, catch people up to speed and what has happened. I don't know. It was okay.
I didn't really care for it.
It does have the Ramos.
It does have the Ramos, and that does... That does color it negatively to me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree. It's not, maybe if it was some other artist, I wouldn't feel better about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it, because of it goes to all, it hits like 4 or 5 different things. Like he's fighting these guys and he's also dealing with Parker Industries and he's also, dealing with the Otto Spider-Man's, you know, little woman girlfriend who she finds a ring, like they're going to get married. She recognizes him, that he's Spider-Man. You know, he's trying to pick up all these pieces. There's all these villains he's fighting. And there's a big joke about him being naked. Like, that's the joke of this issue.
Yeah,
like, that's the gag. Ha ha! He makes web underwear.
This is so written for children. It's just ridiculous. It's unreadable, I think, by an adult.
What do you think about the backup stories? I like those more, honestly.
They were okay-ish. Everyone is all, Dan Slott is this big Spider-Man fan, but it's just, it's almost frustrating to see some of these references to old Spider-Man stories and the history of Spider-Man. It feels...
Mm-hmm.
It feels less like being tied into the history and more like watching one of those scary movie knockoffs,
mm-hmm.
You know, to where they just reference something, you know, like, oh, this is clever. I'm saying this thing. I don't know. I'm not talking about all of them because I did enjoy the first two, the Felicia Hardy story mm-hmm. and the Electro story were both fun.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's interesting that they've rebooted Electro to look a little bit more like the one in the movie. It's just all prepping for the movie.
Hey, guys, did you know there's a Spider-Man movie came out this weekend?
Oh my god, really?
Yeah.
I heard it was bad.
Yeah, it's gotten mixed reviews.
I love how in the Spider-Man 2099 story,
mm-hmm.
like, this woman is getting mugged by the three hipsteriest fuckers on the planet.
I know. God.
Like the dude that pulls the gun, like, literally,
literally.
Now you got me doing
literally.
It. Not literally, but air quotes literally, if you look up hipster in the dictionary that doesn't exist, yeah, that guy. That's what it looks like.
He's got
purple sunglasses, suspenders, that haircut.
Yeah.
Black skinny jeans. They're the skinny jeans gang. They're all wearing black skinny jeans. Kicked in the face by Spider-Man from the future.
Yep. I thought it was okay.
It's not bad, but what? It's really strange and dumb.
I like Joe Caramagna's little... I mean, if you're going to write for children, I like his little story better than...
The history of Spider-Man.
Yeah, there. I thought that was... It's cute and fun, but it's...
You know...
It doesn't take itself seriously.
There was a book at the library... around where I grew up, and I probably checked it out 20 times, but it was the history of Spider-Man that had almost that exact same story,
mm-hmm.
but written in, you know, like a sort of Silver Age, Golden Age sort of way. It was exactly like this. Like everything that it goes through, everything that it explains, it just did it in, you know, it was a weird blast from the past that he did this. I wonder if he had seen it.
Maybe. It's possible.
I don't know that it was ever something that anyone else knows about, but there were, like, that's how I learned about all these superheroes. Like, there was one for Captain America. There might have been one for the Fantastic Four, too, but I know I read the Captain America and the Spider-Man one, like, a zillion times.
Yeah, I didn't read the credits for this one either. I'm getting lazy, I guess. Dan Slott, writer. Humberto, we've already mentioned Humberto Ramos pencils. Victor Alazaba inks. Edgar Delgado doing colors. There's all those backup stories, which has a ton of people too. I'm not going to list all the credits for them. This book is not that exciting.
No, it's not that amazing.
It's not like, I would like, it's Spider-Man. Everyone knows Spider-Man. I don't understand why all this, like,
and now apparently in this timeline, Spider-Man, he didn't exist until 2001.
Well, yeah, it's the sliding timescale thing.
I know it's absurd. I know it's dumb to bring that up, but yeah.
But that's all this is picking up all the pieces from the Superior Spider-Man. This is not an amazing Spider-Man number one. This is not a fresh start. This is so bogged down in all the stuff that happened in Superior Spider-Man. So I'm a do not buy. Do not buy this. This is not, there's just too much stuff going on. Like the Black Cat, her quest for vengeance against Spider-Man, that's interesting. And if it was just about that, that'd be interesting. If it was just about one of these things, it would have been good. There's just no attention. It's like three pages of one thing, and then it's over. You get one page of brooding J. Jonah Jameson, and then there's no more. You get three pages of him fighting these animal people. It's just, hey, look, a joke about Twitter.
Yeah, that's part of the whole writing to teenagers thing that makes me sick. This, like, let's just reference something that's relevant to a teenager and show a guy with a hipster haircut.
The most interesting thing happens.
No thought put into it.
The most interesting thing to me is the second page where there's already been solicitations about this second person who got bit by that spider. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
Why don't we get any more of that? I have to read 40 more issues of The Amazing Spider-Man before we get to that?
That's how it works, buddy.
No, it doesn't have to. You can go right to the good stuff. It's allowed.
Well, then they wouldn't have enough to do a book. They couldn't sell things.
Okay.
Just be happy that you got Spider-Man and his Spidey Whiteys.
I'm not happy about that. This
everyone says ew?
Yeah. He's
what the fuck,
Peter Parker? He's in exquisite shape. Like he could not be more fit than Spider-Man.
No,
literally, no one would go ew. They would go, my God, that guy is incredibly fit.
Yes, and he's climbing on a wall.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's not ew. It's not gross. But I'm a do not buy this book. It costs too much money. There's not enough there.
Well, dude, this book is trying to appease the Spider-Man fans like us while simultaneously still trying to speak to that young demographic that's going to be coming out of the movie going, I want to read a Spider-Man comic. This is number one.
I'm too hipstery for this Spider-Man. I get yep. That's it. I will own up to that.
Yep. Some of us check Spider-Man books out of the fucking library.
I'm sorry. That's five books double do not buy.
Yeah.
Five. Don't buy any of these books we reviewed. They're all terrible, but none of them are good.
I am not surprised that you also did not. Yeah. Why'd you pick these? Did someone like have a gun to your head? Did Rye come visit you?
No, I wish. I would have changed the ones we picked at least. I read Silver Surfer 2 and the new Avengers. They're both good. So we'll buy those books. But I don't know why Dan Slott can write such a good Silver Surfer book. Like Silver Surfer 2, I mean, obviously he's writing Doctor Who. It really is Doctor Who fanfiction. It's so Doctor Who fanfiction. I mean, it's like down to the letter, like, oh look, it's just, you know, it's that same kind of feeling, and the companion is the one saving him, and oh my, but it's still good, and it still has Mike Allred doing the art, and it looks amazing.
I don't understand why we couldn't have swapped out at least one of these turds for that.
I feel like...
But whatever, damn your eyes, Dorman.
The new Avengers 17 is also better than Avengers 28, but it was good. It's worth buying. And then these books weren't. So I think that's it for weekly floppies.
Don't buy comics.
Yeah, none of these. There's
that's what you need to take away with this.
Yeah, all comic books are terrible.
Don't buy comic books.
We're just jaded cynics who hate everything.
That's true.
And it's so strange that we're going to move on to Nerd Boy Book Club, folks. Get your reading glasses on.
Hey, Handsome Minds, this is Robbie. Just to let you guys know, we had some severe technical difficulties this week, so this segment will probably start out normal, but near the end, it's going to be probably abrupt conversation shifts, and just try and be patient with us. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And
just let that hate go.
Yeah, we got a little, whew. I just think it's funny, moving on, that we are reading the book Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud for Nerd Boy Book Club this week. And yep. It is all about how comics are amazing and can do so many things. And yet we hate all the books we read for weekly floppies. That's fine.
They tried so hard to prove it wrong.
They really did. But Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud isn't really, it's a comic book.
Yeah.
It's a comic book about the history of comics and their structure and their form, and
it's a lot about it's like a philosophy of art book,
yeah,
packaged around comic books. Mm-hmm. But he talks a little bit about the history, but also talks about the sort of methods and techniques that are very unique to comics and the sort of blend of writing and art, and I could not be more excited to talk about this book. I had forgotten how much I loved this.
I had never read it. It's been on my list of like, yeah, you should read that thing. You know, the guy who likes comics, you should read the book about liking comics.
I had forgotten how much of my own philosophy of art, and I think you can go back through a lot of our discussions and point out a lot of things that I had taken straight from this book. I had just read it so long ago that it was just sort of, it's just sort of a part of me that I don't even think about it anymore. Like, oh yeah, that.
Yeah. It says a lot of things that you would like seem like intuitive, like naturally occurring thoughts.
Yeah.
But then I see that and I go, I've never thought about it that way, and that's completely exactly. accurate.
Exactly. Yes, in 1984, when he says the best books are the ones that, what is the quote that you already agree with, but you don't have the words to express it?
Mm-hmm.
I sort of like me right now.
Right.
Do you know the quote?
I can't think of it off the top of my head. I haven't read 1984 since high school.
It's really good.
1984? It's good.
It's an incredible book. It's so weird that you would say that.
You
just don't like literature?
No, I really enjoy literature.
It doesn't have enough Iron Man in it.
It's a good book. He stood on the shoulders of giants.
Every piece of art does.
I know, but it's certainly established a vocabulary for that time, a kind of dystopian fiction.
Hmm. Interesting.
The thing that could vocalize, so to speak, a thought that makes complete sense that I've never actually, thought about before, is the contrast between, completely realistic art versus complete
right.
cartoony.
Mm-hmm.
Art, he has these sequences, step by step, things that look more and more and more cartoon, so you could just get a stick figure face. And he explains how sometimes a cartoonish face is actually can be more expressive than a completely realistic face. Because
mm-hmm.
it speaks to you as a reader, that could be you. It's your mask. Kind of.
It's an interesting theory. I don't know that I agree with it 100%, the whole part where it shows, the two people and their brains are sort of only focusing on the parts that they're thinking and controlling at that moment.
Right.
And that overlap, that's the part you're talking about.
Well,
that overlap with the extreme basic, cartoon abstraction of a face.
Right.
I think that might be a bit of a stretch, but clearly the whole aspect of how we as humans, we sort of project ourselves onto everything.
Right.
It's a really central point in this, and that's something that I've carried around with me without even thinking about it pretty much my whole life.
And the thing with a car, I've never thought about
Yeah, I know. That was kind of one of those sort of aha moments when I read this.
Aha.
He hit my car with his car.
No one says that. Everyone says, he hit me.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's right. The car is me.
And that really car
is him.
Exactly. I mean, it really says something about the way our brains work. You think about how, when you play a video game, how immediately, you're plugged into that.
Right.
How it just becomes an extension of your brain, and that's sort of how your brain works anyway, is it's just building these connections if I send this chemical here, then it makes, sends this electrical signal there, and then this arm flexes. That's how we work, and it's just, a couple more simple things, and you're playing a video game or you're driving a car, so it's just sort of how we identify with that. I don't know. It's how did he relate that to comics though? The car hits the car thing. Is that just about projecting yourself onto a character?
Yes, sort of. It's in that same section about the cartoony faces and your extension of yourself and how we use more than the complexity of our senses,
mm-hmm.
absorbing and digesting information, how we like it. It's all synesthesia in this. It's very much.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this book, and it's very dense.
It could be overwhelming. I mean, probably for you having reading it for the first time, also probably not having had too much of a background in the philosophy of visual art.
No. I've had plenty of literature, but not much.
Yeah.
Almost nothing of actual visual arts.
Yeah, I've had classes on this, and I've sort of already had all my aha moments from this. I was just sort of rereading it and going, oh yeah, this is really good.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, it was wonderful to read it again.
Yeah. And I just, I do want to read this. Comics. This is what Scott McCloud came up with it as a definition of what comics
right.
are.
Right.
And this relates back to our several times we've had the discussion of comics versus the term graphic novels.
Yes.
Comics. Juxtaposed pictorial and other images in deliberate sequence intended to convey information and or to produce an aesthetic response in the viewer.
I feel like he would agree with us on that whole...
two words that are not in this... I don't think he uses the word
graphic novel. He does not use
graphic
novel. No. But I feel like he would agree with us on that same... That on our same argument.
Yes.
I mean, he's gonna... I'm sure he would say, you know, comics are not a dirty word. But he even talks about that.
Right.
Particularly early about the preconceived notions about what comic means.
Right.
And I don't... We keep coming back to this. You know, I don't really have a problem necessarily. It still feels gross to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that is released in that format and it's not ever serialized, calling it a graphic novel because it's released as one contained story like a novel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really have a problem with that. I'm still going to call it a comic.
I kind of like the idea of calling it an OGN, but it not ever referring to what those letters stand for.
There you go.
That's what the, I mean, can we just call it an OGN and not ever, it's like the WWE, what the WWE now is. It doesn't stand for anything. It's just that's what it is.
It's like KFC.
Yeah, it's KFC. Don't think about the letters. Don't think what they represent. It's just letters. That's all they
just,
is.
Just think about wrestling chicken.
It's wrestling chicken. I mean, yeah, he goes there. That's a substantial portion of this is about how comics are thought as low art. And like anything that is actually really does meet the definition of comics, people go out of their way to not define it as comics.
Right.
Because you can't group them together because comics are low art and this is high art. We can't call it comics. And
the whole, he comes more to the defense of the highbrow artists. I'm very down on them because I think that most high art is just a bunch of charlatans. I think Duchamp was sort of a charlatan and he mentions Duchamp specifically in the chapter where he talks about motion on a static image.
Mm-hmm.
So many, and that is, he defines it as art has evolved, but most people's ideas of what art is has not evolved. It's still back a couple hundred years ago.
It's true.
Well, I think that people just want art that they can relate to, that has something to do with their life, when most fine artists are just, they just make bullshit and they just want to bullshit people. You know, I recently had the pleasure of going to a senior exhibition of artists in downtown Tampa. And let me tell you, these fine artists, they are swallowing this shit hook, line, and sinker. And how we can encourage artists to make meaningless horseshit art is just terribly frustrating to me. You know, and somehow someone makes a completely nonsensical, like, video. You know, there was literally a video of a guy putting lipstick on and making out with himself on a mirror. And he was projecting the video of that on the wall as an installation and as another piece in the show. Was the mirror smeared over with lipstick. I mean, what is that supposed to mean? I don't care what you're going to write, what you're going to say it means. It's, who gives a fuck?
All right. So all you modern artists out there.
No, seriously. I mean, how does that relate to anyone? How?
I don't.
Does that improve anyone's life?
I don't think the avant-garde nature of it is the problem. I think the problem is it's not any kind of original content.
Well, most people are like this. Most people, I'm not saying that is what most people think art is. you know, is making that kind of garbage and being an idiot, being a charlatan.
When you say most people, you mean like the layman or most artists?
A lot of young artists certainly do, and almost all laymen do.
Well, when they think of modern art, yes, that's what they
do. And, well, they think of any sort of art.
No, they don't. And that's not their first thought. Their first thought is art is paintings from 300 years ago. Mona Lisa.
I honestly don't think so. If they're thinking of, I don't think that anyone, a layman even, can name, like, a second artist from 300 years ago. And Mona Lisa is not from 300 years ago.
I know that. I'm saying that if you take someone off the street, when they can't name an artist. They mm-hmm. can't name the pieces. But
like, they're not going to, but if you ask them what kind of art is being made right now.
Well, that's modern art. That's what I'm saying. I think that conceptual modern art is perfectly accurate.
First of all, we're not even in the modern art movement anymore.
Most people don't. I understand that. Most people don't even realize that. They think modern art means now.
Well, it should mean now. But still, this is what I'm saying.
We're like post-modern or something at this point.
I don't even know. It doesn't even matter. The whole thing is there are good artists in this era. There are a lot of very wonderful and talented people. Most of it is just a bunch of clowns, at least in my opinion. I just am disgusted by the fact that illustrators are looked down upon, and that is a big thesis in this book, that there's just as much energy put into trying to communicate very deep things, very important things in this sort of language of comics, and yet it's low art. It can't be real art. I don't understand it. Are people 500 years from now, are they really going to be talking about our mutt putting a urinal in a juried show? Are they going to be talking? I mean, you know, Shakespeare wasn't considered fine art in his day.
No, he was considered it was low art.
Yeah, exactly.
Lowbrow.
Exactly.
It was for the poor people.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, Shakespeare, most of his art was established on stories that were already told, and he just gussied them up.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a bunch of archetypes, which is exactly what superhero comics are.
Exactly.
A bunch of archetypes, which, yeah. I mean, used to tell stories. Mostly simple stories.
And, no, exactly. And it has stood the test of time. I mean, there's certainly a lot of other things that were probably considered high art, and I'm sure that people still know about them and study them, but the low art became high art. People are going to look down their nose at whatever. Beyond that, I think that it's also really great that he brings up the whole idea of comics medium.
Right.
And not as genre.
Yes, completely different.
I really liked his metaphor of the pitcher.
Yes.
The thing that frustrates me is an illustrator at the top of his game is looked down on just for being what he is, when, you know, an average, that I might call a charlatan, someone else might call, you know, whatever. He's a fine artist in the New York art world or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, inherently better. Why? No good reason. You know, they're putting ideas and bullshit over craft when illustrators are putting craft in. I mean, I would say craft and ideas.
I think
over just bullshit.
I will play devil's advocate here and say,
go right ahead.
I will say that they will probably have that viewpoint, at least this prototypical person we're talking about, this snobby mm-hmm. person we're talking about. They probably have that viewpoint because they think these artists, these charlatans, are trying something new, or they're trying to try something new.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote-unquote illustrator is working in a medium that is well-established, and they're you know, they may be telling, making good art and telling good stories, but it's not dangerous, quote unquote.
And I don't know that it necessarily needs to be dangerous. I think that that is a definition of what art is. I think that things should have more utility, to be perfectly honest. And I think that most people don't really have any use in their lives for the kind of art that most people, that what most people think is art.
Well, yeah. Those people don't care about normal people.
They find.
At all. They do not, they don't even consider anyone who doesn't, you know, partake in this, in that culture, probably they do not think about this. Give them a second thought.
Mm-hmm. Getting the heart of what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. May I read to you, Robbie?
Sure.
Let's pull up by the fireside.
It's a little warm for fire.
But the ideal of the latter is alive in the hearts of many artists who may hope for success, but won't alter their work to obtain it. The fine artist, the pure artist, says to the world, I didn't do this for money. I didn't do this to match the color of your couches. I didn't do this to get laid. I didn't do this for fame or power or greed or anything else. I did this for art. In other words, my art has no practical value whatsoever, but it's important.
Right.
That, I think, is a sick sort of attitude, and I think that that is kind of what's wrong with most artists. You know, most art and engineering use a lot of the same parts of your brain, and I think there's a lot of overlap. I mean, I've read essays by hackers where they talk about how high-level artists, they have the same mindset as like an engineer or something, and there's common ground, there's camaraderie between the two groups. Yet engineers are perfectly happy to build things with function that help people, and artists have this sort of mentality that I've got to remain true to the art and make garbage artwork that no one likes but me and my mom. Well, or possibly not my mom.
They don't think about it like that. I think you're presupposing that they have this, like they're con men. I don't think that most, I'm sure there's some of them do think like that. Some of them, I don't think most of them are thinking, I need to like con people and liking this. They just go, I want to make a statement in this way, and they may be pretentious. I will give you that.
I have met many, many of them, and I mean, this attitude that I'm presenting here, I mean, this is not wholly original on my part. This is based off of things that I've read. This book in being one of them, the other one being things I've read by Robert Crumb.
Okay.
You can certainly make counter arguments to this, but I know that most of the artists that I have met, most of them are hollow. That's why, like, I really liked his 6-step process here at the end.
Right, yeah.
That almost everyone is sort of stuck at the surface. And it really feels like even a lot of these great artists, it was all surface. It was all hollow.
Well, he talks about that. That's kind of a segue into the other part of this book, where like a lot of this book is philosophy of art and stuff like that, but a lot of this stuff is kind of nuts and bolts, kind of organizing frames, timelines, how the gutter works, how comic storytelling works in a certain, like, you know, how even Eastern versus Western comics tell stories differently, how they organize time frame differently. But he does break it down, but to the 6-step process, he goes through this thing where, you know, there's some people who never get past the surface. And then he kind of goes to, from artist to artist, as they get one step further in the process, basically. Where they try and become a quote unquote better artist. By going deeper, I guess. From idea to form to idiom to structure to craft to surface. And go deeper and deeper and deeper. And one, he now talks about how the ideas and the arrows go different directions, and depending on these artists and their thoughts. And like I said before, I kind of understood all this, but I never really, like, had it seen it. Kind of said, you know, oh yeah, it makes sense. And it's probably all very kind of rudimentary to you.
Well, maybe that's why I'm brushing past it.
It's not rudimentary to me.
In terms of the storytelling and all that, sure. That it's all, I mean, it's like I said, I don't know how many times I had read this before, but seeing it again was just sort of that, oh yeah, moment where it's all things that I had forgotten I had known, and I'd forgotten where I had picked it up from, and it's clearly all from here.
I don't think the average comics reader fully processes all this.
No, I mean, I honestly don't think that most comic writers are thinking about this.
No, that's,
writers or artists, no one's thinking about this. This is, it's like people that make movies, they make films, you know, without even thinking about the things that they're doing. They've just seen films and...
Or aping it.
Yeah, aping is not a bad way to look at it, but you're just doing things and not realizing why it works, you know? Like, there's a whole sort of language to film, just, you know, like, he's laying out here and understanding comics, there's a whole language to comics that people just sort of use and make their books with without even realizing it.
Yeah, and it's really funny because I was reading, there's a section about, a lot of this book, but he mentioned there's a whole bunch about narration. There's a scene where he juxtaposes narration with this sequence of this woman going walking through the rain to get ice cream. And, you know, he kind of picks it apart and shows different ways you could use narration or to tell a story completely different with the same art, so to speak. And it seems so simple, but, you know, I've tried to write comics before, you know, actually write a comic book, and it gets a little, it's hard to understand that. It doesn't, until you read it, it's put it out so simply, you see, oh, well, that makes perfect sense. Why, it's so simple. And Greg Pak, who's, you know, quite established comic book writer, writes Superman, Batman, writes Action Comics, wrote World War Hulk, which we read, wrote Planet Hulk. He posted a question on his Tumblr, yesterday, right after I finished this book, about some guys like, I'm writing my first comic, or I'm writing a comic, or I'm working on writing comics, and I don't know what to, like, I want to do like movies, or, you know, people tell you, I come from writing movies where they say show, don't tell, stuff like that. And so I don't want to use narration, but my brain is fighting that. Like, it wants to use narration. And Greg Pak's like, I used to be the same way. I didn't want to use narration. I just wanted to show. And he's like, but comics aren't film. Comics are comics. He said, you know, as long as you're not displaying the same information in the art and in the text, it's fine. You are still showing with the different words and the different art. They're that juxtaposition. And Greg Pak is an established comic book writer. And for him for a long time not to understand that is really funny to me. And the way, and you mentioned that a lot of people, artists don't necessarily process all this. They don't necessarily go, oh, this is what I'm doing. They just,
well, no one thinks about it on that scholarly level.
No.
It's just sort of automatic because either you've seen it or you just sort of innately understand it. That's sort of why so much of this book clicks, is because it's been not rationalized, but it's been processed and put into words. You know, you just have a lot of those, that uh-huh moments, you know.
Right.
It all makes sense. There's not a lot of this that is, that you can really disagree with.
The way, like, he sets out the different types of, like, the transition scale from 1 to 6, and how the difference between Eastern and Western comics. I thought that was very, very fascinating. Cause I haven't read a lot of manga, so I mean, I don't have a big frame of reference for it, but that was one of the most interesting things. Like, all these Western comics, despite having completely different, genres and content, are very similar, even between American and European artists, are close, but then you go to Eastern artists in Japan, and completely different.
I certainly enjoyed that part. You know, talk about the traditions behind each of those things and the cultural ideas behind both of them. And you can really tell a difference. Since you had not read a lot of manga, there's a lot of cinematic dicking around and floating from object to object. And it's a meme really throughout almost all Japanese comics.
It's interesting to me that the format is what drives that. At least that's mm-hmm. what McCloud says. That because they get released in a different format than American comics or Western.
Well, they're not all released that way. That, it is a big part of that for sure. I mean, he's certainly not off base on that, but they're certainly not all released that way.
Do you think that's what actually initially spurred the difference? Or no?
Well, I mean, he also talks about the sort of history behind it, and I think a lot of that is in play as well.
The goal-oriented culture of America and the Western.
Yeah. I think there's more to do there, which is why it's reasonably consistent across these cultures. You know, the storytelling and the memes, the joke telling and the symbols, these things stay reasonably consistent across cultures. It's a little bit deeper than just the format, even though that does have a huge impact on it, obviously.
Do you think comics will ever be viewed as high art?
That's a really good question. I sincerely hope so. We might all be dead and gone, and people might be, you know, reading Tessica or Alan Moore or something like that. I think there are a lot of non-highbrow art community people that do view them as very important art.
Do you think that's important? Do you think they need to be important?
I think it's important that artwork that is important to people is thought of as important. You know? Do you think Stephen King is a real artist?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, but for a long, long, long time, people have been calling him a hack.
Well, he's been around for 40 freaking years, so I think that's what
true,
it is.
But I mean, a lot of artists in literature, I mean, they were best-selling authors too.
Oh yeah. It's popular.
It's right for Cosmopolitan, I think. And he talked about how it's no longer a periodical with short stories in it. It's an explicit sex, a manual for explicit sex acts.
It's strange to me because comics are in this niche kind of area. A single comic in America is considered extremely successful. Like, Amazing Spider-Man hit 500,000 pre-orders, which is, like, unprecedented in a decade for Marvel. Like, it's the biggest selling comic for Marvel in a decade. And, like, the heyday, quote-unquote, of comic books was in the early 90s when things were selling a million copies. But I don't think that popularism, it would seem to create the opposite effect. Like, The Walking Dead, the television show is driving people to pick up the comic book. But it's because the television show is successful and popular is that people are now making the comic book popular. I don't think that comic books, I want comic books to be popular and successful, because it should be exposed to as many people as possible, and hopefully the more people read them, the less of this kind of snobby attitude there will be, even among modern people. But I don't think that that necessarily will make them people view it as high art. It'll just be like the thing you said about Stephen King. Oh, they're hacky. It's comic books. I don't know if it's...
I think the very definition of... I mean, anyone who... I think anyone who likes comic books thinks comics are art. And I don't think there's any debate about that. I think that we're beyond the point of like comics are like some kind of guilty pleasure where you go, I can't believe I'm reading this dreck or anything. I think when comic books have, I have a feel like for the most part, people who are under 40 years old or under 50 years old, or even my dad is in his 60s. He was at MegaCon. And he showed you that stuff he bought, and he certainly views that as art. He doesn't go, this stuff is, you know, this is lowbrow crap. This, he's like...
Speaking of old comics, did you see the cameo of your Black Bolt comic, your Fantastic Four?
I did. I was going to be like, I have that comic. Yeah, he certainly views that as art, and my dad's in his 60s. He doesn't go, oh, this isn't art. He loves Jack Kirby. He loves, I know you're not a huge fan of Kirby, but Kirby's certainly a groundbreaker.
All my education on the philosophy of art, I went into it knowing what art was and walked away not having a clue what art was. That's what, it's defined by someone that's so far removed from their sphere of concern that it doesn't matter. But, you know, you define it for yourself and, you know, for my mom, Thomas Kincaid is a great artist. Never. I certainly don't care for it. I can be a snob about it. But it provides value in her life. It's the same thing with this, you know? Same thing with your dad, Jack Kirby.
So folks, that was Understanding Comics, The Invisible Art by Scott McCloud. Excellent, excellent book. If you haven't read it already, which you should have if you're listening to this, you should have read this beforehand. Go pick it up. It's really, really good. Great, great book about comics and art. So next week, we are not doing Nerdboy Book Club. Instead, we are having our State of the Comics Union. That'll bring us to a close. Handsomeites, I know you want more, but, you know, just wait till next week. So, folks, we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes or search for Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us and subscribe to us or give us reviews. More reviews get us more listeners. We like more listeners. You can find us on the Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. Like us there. We'll put stuff in your feed, feeding page. We're on Twitter at HBCHour. You can get us on email at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Phrase that correctly, or on Tumblr, handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com, and I think that's it for us. For me, you can get me on Twitter at mixmastercereal. It's mixmastercereal. Also on Tumblr, same name. Eric, when they find you online?
I'm back again. Handsomeites, Eric's outro did not record correctly, so I'm going to record it for him. You can find his portfolio at Free Will Unlimited. You can find all the things he gets up to online at ericziganite.com, and you can tweet at him at Mr. Bad Example. That's MR Bad Example.
Yeah, folks, any of those places, message us, leave us comments, reviews, suggestions, criticisms, you know, stuff. Yep, any of those places, we like to hear from you. But until next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll.